This show was first broadcast on Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. For more information on our lineup of shows and the role we play in the media, visit freefm.org.nz.
I'm Sairam to our listeners. Welcome to Saturday News number 1011. So I'm Glad Bilimoria of Sri Shatasai International Organisation of New Zealand, and I offer my most loving and humble pranams at the lotus feet of our beloved Bhagwan, Sri Shatasai Baba. Today we'll be hearing two talks. One was given by Brother Arvind on the topic of what has Sri Shatasai come to give, and the other one will be from Radio Sai in Prasanthi on the topic of adding life to our ears. So let's get straight into it.
I would like to begin by offering my most humble pranams at the lotus feet of beloved Bhagwan. Dear Swami, respected elders, dear brothers and sisters. So there is this statement that Bhagwan often makes. I give you what you seek so that one day you will seek what I have come to give. This statement is very, very profound. Especially in these times, when I thought over it, I felt it made a special meaning as well. Because when we say that Swami has come to give something, we might think that those days are now over. Swami had come to give, but now He is no longer there. What does it mean by Swami having come to us? I often used to think that this means Swami's physical descent on earth as an avatar. But today I realize Swami comes to us even now. Even when the avatarhood is complete, 96 years are over, Swami continues to come to us if only we keep our eyes and ears open. You know, I was reminded of a very beautiful incident recorded by Diana Baskin in her book Divine Memories with Sri Sathya Sai Baba. She was so excited and thrilled, and they had made their first trip to Puttaparthi as well. That was the time when her mother had stubbed and broken her toe, and with just one touch in the interview room, Swami had miraculously cured her mother's toe fracture. After this visit, when they went back, she was so excited in the United States in her home. She filled all the places with Swami's photographs, brought Swami's books, kept it everywhere. This irritated her husband a lot. Her husband was from the entertainment industry. Joel, his name is Joel Radin. Joel was from the entertainment industry. He was into partying, he was into spending time drinking, smoking, friends, gala parties, a high life, a high social life, the American dream, what we often think as. This is what he used to do, and he found this very strange that his wife is going behind some Sai Baba. In fact, he would not even call Swami as Sai Baba. He used to keep telling his wife and his friends that character. What you're going behind that character? Who is this character? Who is this with his wild bushy hair? And this is the way he would refer to Swami. And though Diana would always feel that my husband also should follow Swami, be devoted to Swami, she realized that the more she told him, the more he would oppose, more fun he made of Swami, more he became against Swami kind of. So she just kept quiet. I think I should go to Puttaparthi and debunk him once for all. So he told his wife that, yeah, next time when you go to Puttaparthi, I'll also come. I will show you what a fool you are. I'll show you how you are falling for cheap magic tricks. Because, you know, all these things, you're telling he's creating a watch, chain, vibhuti. He can hide it in his hair. You know how much hair is there? He can hide a whole bag of stuff there. That's what he told her. He can hide it in his cuff. There are 100 ways you can hide. I am in this industry only. Magicians I have seen, I have attended so many magic shows, I'll take you also. These are all very simple, and if you fell for these, I really pity you. So I'll come, I'll give you an explanation. The wife said, how do you explain this? What? How do you explain my mother's toe getting healed? See, the mother's toe was getting healed naturally. After 20 days, any fracture gets healed. That's all. On the 20th day, Swami happened to touch the toe. And you are thinking Swami's touch cured the toe. No, it's natural process. This is what he told. So she kept quiet. She said, okay, fine. Let's go to India when you want. Then that evening when Joel was with his friends partying and drinking, he told them, I'm going to go to India. There's this person, one character is there. And my wife thinks that this character is some guru, some spiritual god, all these stuff. So the friends were very curious. They said, okay, so what are you going to do? What are you going to go and debunk? He said, you know, everybody goes and they're telling that he's giving this and that. I'm going to ask for something that he just cannot give. What you'll ask for? Anything. I'll ask him for a rainbow. He told his friends, I'm going to ask him for a rainbow. Let me see how he'll pull out a rainbow from his hair or dress or anywhere. It's just not possible. With this plan, they arrived in India. This is the early days. So when they came to Puttaparthi was so primitive. And Joel was, he had stayed in Bangalore at the Taj West End. Even to this day, it's one of the finest 5-star hotels in Bangalore. And from Taj West End to Puttaparthi was like a journey from the topmost to the bottommost in terms of physical comfort. What we don't realize is often when the body and the mind don't get their comfort, the soul begins to progress. That is why in the Dwapara Yuga, Kunti, the mother of the Pandavas, she prayed to Krishna, Krishna, fill my life with troubles, please. And Krishna was wondering, why? Didn't you have enough troubles already? She says, Krishna, I have noticed that whenever I am in trouble, I keep thinking of you. And when I am not in trouble, I don't think of you. So please fill my life with troubles. When we seek spiritual growth, we say, Swami, we want to get close to you. We want to get dear to you. We suddenly notice, our troubles seem to be increasing. Problems seem to be growing. Because that is how it is. When we are lost in our body and mind, mental comforts, we won't be able to progress. When we do bodybuilding, no? When we do push-ups, exercises, the body pains. But in that pain, we know we are growing strong. So anyway, as he came, he was like, what is this place? You want me to stay here? Sleep on the floor? She said, no, I have brought a mattress from Bangalore. Mattress? But I was in 5-star comfort. What kind of a character is this guy? He expects you to live in such difficult situations. He was so irritated. He pulled out his cigarette packet and he pulled out one cigarette. And the wife says, no. You're not allowed to smoke here. You don't even have freedom in this place. What sort of a goddamn forsaken place it is? He didn't know it's not a God forsaken place. God has come to this place. She said, no, you don't smoke now. Wait, I'll help you, wait. So she put back the cigarette in the box. And after some time quickly settling in the room, she said, come, let's go beyond the ashram into the hills. So they go to the hills right behind where it is. And she says, okay, now you smoke and get your release, whatever. So he sits on one rock. It's a bright day. No cloud, clear sky. And from the top of the mountain, they're able to see the entire valley, Puttaparthi, the ashram, the Chitravati river flowing at a distance. It was so beautiful for Diana. She felt solitude. It was so desolate for Joel. He felt lonely. The same thing. Somebody feels solitude, somebody is feeling lonely. So anyway, he pulls out a cigarette. He puts it in his mouth. Before he can light it, his jaw drops, the cigarette drops, and he tells his wife, look. She sees in the direction he is pointing, and in the sky, there is a rainbow. And not an ordinary rainbow. The rainbow that we see is curved, right, like that. This is more like a rain arrow, if I can say, because it shot up straight into the sky. Not a bow, but an arrow. And he says, look at that. And as they look at it, they look at it at the bottom where it's touching the earth and they start going up with the rainbow. As they start looking up, the rainbow starts also fading. So you can understand, right? Like a magic show it is. You see a rainbow touching the earth, going up, shooting into the sky, and you trace the rainbow from the bottom upwards, and as you trace it with your eyes, it starts vanishing till it completely vanishes. And Joel is like, wow. Did you see that? That's fantastic. Wow. Diana is like, yeah, it's interesting, but what's so wow about it? That's when Joel realizes that even his wife did not know about his desire. what he had told his friends. He had told his friends that I'm going to ask that character for a rainbow. Let me see how he'll produce a rainbow. And here was a rain arrow. A rainbow that was specially made so that it registers in your mind that this is not an ordinary rainbow. A special one. And he tells this to his wife. Even as he tells this, they are so stunned, he decides not to smoke at that point. They start walking back down. As they come down to their room, Professor Kasturi has come there to their room. He's come there with a message saying, Swami has said he will meet you tomorrow morning. Wow. Interview. And the next day morning, they go to the interview room. As soon as they enter the interview room, Swami looked at Joel and says, Hey character, did you like my rainbow? That's it. That moment, there's tears streaming down his cheeks. Tears. Tears that cleanse, tears that fill the heart with beauty and joy. I give you what you seek, so that one day you will seek what I have come to give. Swami has not come to give vibhuti, ring, chain, or even rainbows. What is it that he has come to give? If we have to one day ask him for what he has come to give, we need to first understand, right? What is it that Swami has come to give? Instead of trying to understand what is it that Swami has come to give so that we can ask for it, what we do is we make it a habit of asking. Hey, I asked for rainbow, I got rainbow. Next time, let me ask for something else. Let me ask for some rain. Let me ask for some sunshine. Let me ask for this. Let me ask for that. I got one interview from Swami. What you want now? Now I want another interview. Ask a person who has got 20 interviews, he'll still say that I wish I had one more interview. There is no end at all. We just make it a habit of asking. I remember in my college days, in the beginning, you come fully charged, and when I wrote a letter to Swami, Swami, I just want you. I don't want anything else. I want to think of you. I want you in my life, every moment of my life, every day of my life. I mean, that's the ultimate prayer. I've asked it. That's it. Like, that's what is the ultimate goal, right? To be with Swami always. And Swami took that letter also. After that, another 100 letters I have given Swami. Why? Again, next letter, something else. After that, something else. Then some problem. Then this, you know. Swami, studies, help me. Swami, help me in this. Swami, that is becoming a problem. Swami could have brought my first letter and said, hey, look what you wrote here. You said you want this and nothing else. What you are going on asking more and more. But we don't realize. We keep continuing to cry. What is that? What is that that we are seeking? And it reminds me of another beautiful incident. This was narrated by one of my teachers, Ravi Kumar sir. He was pursuing his education at Anantapur in the Krishna Devaraya University there. And every weekend he would come to Puttaparthi for having darshan. One day Swami called him into the interview room, and there were some others also Swami had called for interview. And in the interview room, Swami asked him, why do you come every weekend here to Puttaparthi? He said, Swami, to have darshan. Swami said, why you want to have darshan? He said, Swami, because it gives me bliss, ananda. Swami asked, does it give you bliss or happiness? He said, Swami, it is bliss. Swami asked him, how do you know, what is the difference between bliss and happiness? And Ravi Kumar sir says, it was surely Swami's blessings and grace that the correct answer came. And he said, Swami, when we are hungry, we eat food. We eat some tasty, maybe rasgulla or gulab jamun, some sweet. The next time I am hungry, I again need to eat. I can't think of what I ate last time and fill my stomach. In fact, that will make me even more miserable. When I am hungry, instead of eating, if I think of the feast that I had last time, I will feel even more hungry. I will not feel better. So when I eat like that, Swami, that is happiness. Swami, today I am speaking with you. Many years later, maybe I won't get this opportunity to speak with you. At that time, if I think of this moment when I am speaking with you, I'll still feel the same joy, Swami. That's why that is bliss. That's permanent. Wow, what an answer, right? Even now, we talk about these beautiful incidents and feel joy in our heart. That's bliss. That's a nice way of describing bliss through an experience. But what is bliss? This bliss is something that Swami has explained so beautifully again to another Sai brother of ours. Swami actually directly asked him, what is Ananda? What is this bliss? This brother was very well read. He has read all the scriptures and different books, and he gave so many definitions of what bliss is. Swami said, no. And then Swami gave his own definition. A lovely definition, you know. Swami gives it so simply. The truth is so simple. And Swami said, causeless happiness is bliss. Causeless happiness is bliss. Whenever you are feeling happy, think why you are feeling happy. Okay. And this is not what Swami said, this is my understanding. Whenever you are feeling happy, think why you are feeling happy. Is there a reason? Yeah, I am feeling happy because Swami came in my dream. Then that's not bliss. Because there is a reason, right? Causeless happiness alone is bliss. That is the definition Swami has given for bliss. So, causeless happiness is bliss, and that is what Swami has come to give. And this is not what I am saying. This is what Swami said in one of his earliest and first declarations. And Swami said, Akhila manavulaku anandamuna gurchi rakshinchu chundute deekshanaku. Swami said, I have a task, I have a work, I have a job that I have come to do. What is it? To Akhila manavulaku, to the entire mankind, anandamuna gurchi, filling them with ananda, filling them with bliss, rakshinchu chundute, and protecting them. That is the job which I have come to do. That is what I have come to give. Swami has come to give ananda, bliss. That is what, as I said, he himself declared. We feel that, oh, Swami's form has left us. He's no longer with us. But you know what? Even his form was something that he gave us temporarily, so that one day we will ask him for what he has come to give. Going by Swami's definition of causeless bliss, you know, causeless happiness is bliss. Swami's physical frame itself is a cause for joy. And if I am feeling happy because of that, it is wonderful, no doubt. But that is not bliss, because it is still dependent on his physical frame. And that is why, you know, I think, however hard it might be, Swami left. 24th April 2011, millions of hearts would have prayed that, right? Swami says, when the devotion in your heart comes to the Lord melts, because the Lord is like butter. And I was wondering, Swami, if you are like butter, that day we created a furnace. Because millions from around the globe, the Americas, Australia, Africa, Asia, Europe, possibly even Antarctica, even in that cold place, there was warmth and heat of devotion being generated. Swami, please don't go, come back. I don't think any time before those many number of people would have prayed. And I'm sure everybody would have prayed. Everyone prayed, and yet Swami, you didn't come back to that physical form. Because humanity as a whole, like a baby, was crying and throwing away, refusing to eat the food, not knowing that we are hungry. And when the mother forces open the mouth and stuffs the spoon inside, that's also with love only. That's what Swami did. Bangaru, I have come to give you ananda. Akhila manavulaku anandamuna gurchi. I want to fill you with bliss. And you are being satisfied with happiness. So I will give you bliss. So that's my task. Whether you want it or not, I will give you that. Seek causeless happiness. Can I just be happy? And if somebody asks me, why are you happy? I'm happy. Why? I don't know. That's bliss. Dear Swami, let us always think of you. Let us yearn for you. Let us pine for you. And may our love for you keep growing stronger every passing day. Thank you. Jai Sai Ram.
People sometimes say, science is evil. This is not true because science is merely knowledge. However, knowledge can be used for good or evil purposes. This is a choice humans make, so it is wrong to blame science for many of the problems we face today. There cannot be any question, science has conferred many benefits on humanity. One being an increase in longevity. Around 1940, the average life expectancy in India was 27 years. But today, it has climbed to over 50. In the advanced countries, it is common to see people live beyond 70 and 80. This is good news, but there is also a flip side to it. The late President Kennedy called attention to this in his own characteristic way. He said, "We have added years to life, but we still have the task of adding life to years." What did he mean by that? It's nice to live longer, but old age also brings its many gifts like arthritis, hip fractures, and so on, all of which can handicap a person. And this is where the problem starts. Who will take care of the elderly, especially those in poor health, disabled or infirm, or suffer from dementia or Alzheimer's disease? This is both an individual and a social issue, and one which is rapidly becoming critical, as the number of aged people is increasing, even while in many countries the birth rate is declining. Let's start with the individual. Everyone on earth exists because of his or her parents, who take care of their offspring in infancy when they cannot survive on their own. The mother in particular makes enormous sacrifices, which begin when she carries the baby in her womb, through the pain suffered at birth, and then taking care of the infant, which is a 24-hour job. Though all this is well known, it is often forgotten by children when they grow up, especially in these days. For thousands of years, all societies regarded taking care of one's parents in their old age a mandatory responsibility. And for the most part, this was done, and they were not discarded like worn-out clothes. In modern times, things have changed drastically as children move far away to other cities and countries for work, and family unity becomes difficult to maintain. And when the lady of the house is also a working woman, this further compounds the problem. In the affluent countries, we have seen the emergence of retirement colonies and nursing homes in which seniors can live without needing their children to care for them. But this system is expensive to run, and those with lower incomes and small savings cannot afford these institutions. Often such people survive by becoming babysitters for their grandchildren. Instead of being taken care of in their twilight years, they are forced by financial circumstances to bring up another generation of children. In India, the ancient tradition is to regard mother as God. But today, we see sons abandoning their mothers and leaving them to be cared for by their daughters. In one household, the daughter-in-law was so hostile, she would lock up the refrigerator when she went to work, leaving the aged parents of her husband to go hungry all day, and then only provided some scraps as their evening meal. Their son's home had become their prison. Swami has commented on this sad state of affairs, and we would like to draw attention to what he says about the debt we all owe to our parents. Swami says that if a person borrows from a bank, he must settle the debt. If he fails to do so, he will face severe consequences. It is the same with parents, especially the mother. Swami says, every human being occupies the mother's womb for 9 months. What about paying rent for that? Swami adds, that is why the mother is called a parent. The word is a reminder that one must pay rent to one's mother. This is typical of the way Baba loves to play on words. But behind the wordplay is a serious message. Paying rent to the mother means taking care of her in her old age. If one defaults, they will get paid back by destiny. That is what the law of karma is all about. In a home for the aged in New Zealand, regularly visited by Sai children, the inmates were very happy whenever the children came because they gave the old people the love their own sons and daughters should have provided. There was one particular lady the children loved very much. One week, when they came, they found her bed empty. When they asked where she was, they were told that she had passed away. The children sat there and wept. One wonders whether the sons and daughters of this old woman grieved as much as these children did. We would do well to remember that the love a mother selflessly showers on her baby is actually the love of God, the physical mother being an instrument for God. That is why in ancient India, it was so important to regard mother as God. As Swami says, there is no mother who hates her son, but there are many sons who develop an aversion for their mother when they grow up because the mother is now a burden to them. Can we afford to forget who gave us life and provided so much love and protection? Yes, people are living longer, but unless life is meaningful and satisfying for the aged, the extension of their life may well be pointless. This enrichment of old age cannot be done by machines or technology, but only by humans, especially sons and daughters. In this day and age, is that asking for too much? Can we dispose of our parents when they become elderly, like we do with old TV sets, cell phones, computers and cars? Is that what we consider progress? Think about it. Thank you for listening. Jai Sai Ram.
For more episodes, use the accessmedia.nz app for iOS and Android devices, or subscribe to this podcast via Spotify, iHeartRadio, or Apple Podcasts. This free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.